And hey, Crystal, I guess we're live now on Facebook. Sorry, as we're here live on Zoom on our Facebook Live page on Augusta Free Press. I'm Chris Graham, and Crystal Graham is joining me here, and we're going to talk on the latest on COVID-19 response specific to Virginia, Stanton, Waynesboro, Augusta, Harrisonburg, Rockingham, and Charlottesville, Albemarle. Crystal, hope you're having a good morning.
I am, and glad that we're getting Zoom to work. I think a lot of people have had technology issues. I've seen a lot of problems with Facebook going live and that kind of thing, but I think it's just because there's such a larger number of people that are all of a sudden, you know, using these platforms, and maybe there's some issues with bandwidth and things of that nature. So it seems like they're starting to work themselves out.
That's right. So, Crystal, let's talk through some of the news of the day as we're talking this morning, Wednesday morning, 10 o'clock, roughly Eastern time. Maybe the first thing we should talk about, economic impact payments, what you need to know. I think you've been doing some research into this morning. I know it's one of our top stories right now on Augusta Free Press.
Sure. Well, you know, it started coming out earlier this week. You know, obviously stimulus checks, I guess they're officially called economic impact payments, are going to be coming out to most people here in the United States. And so one of the things that people are starting to ask is, okay, when are we going to start to see these checks? And is there anything that I need to do? And so actually our accountant, Chris McMacken, who's based in Stanton, sent a note this morning asking if Augusta Free Press could help get the word out a little bit more. Her particular issue is that not everyone will automatically get a check. And what I mean by that is, if you didn't file a tax return in 2018 or 2019, you need to go ahead and do one. There's apparently a simple tax return that you can fill out. And this is primarily for senior citizens, but there are some other people who probably haven't filed for one reason or another. And so you do have to file the simple tax return in order to get the stimulus payment. And the good news is that that information is readily available on AugustaFreePress.com. You can also go to the IRS website for that information, but fill out that simple return. The other questions that arise regarding this, and I've seen a lot of conversations about this right now. One is, how will this come to me? Will it come to me as a check or a direct deposit? Well, for small businesses like us, we've always had to pay in, you know, when it comes to what we don't get refunds and things of that nature. So most likely the IRS does not have our direct deposit information, for example. And I'm sure there's many of you that for one reason or another haven't given direct deposit information. Maybe you've worked with a third party service or something like that instead of filing directly with the IRS. So if that's the case, apparently they're going to be setting up, the IRS is going to be setting up some kind of a web portal, and that will allow you to go in and put in your information so that for most people, you actually get your money direct deposited instead of waiting for a check. So that information hasn't been released yet. You'll have to stay tuned for that if you're going to need to provide that. The main thing is that there's a lot of scams going on, as you can imagine, as a result of this too. And so if someone does call you on the phone to try to get that information posing as the IRS, definitely don't give that information over the phone. You want to wait until you get information about this particular web portal from the IRS, and we'll give you more information if that becomes available as far as what the process is going to be for that. The other thing that some people have asked about is, what if you're withholding? What if you owe taxes, or for whatever reason, your tax, you know, any kind of refund that you would normally get is withheld and it goes somewhere else? And from what I've read from a lot of leading experts who have been kind of breaking this down into FAQs or frequently asked questions, they're saying that no, this money will not be withheld from you. And also, if you have, you just haven't filed your 2018 or 2019 taxes because you're behind, from what I read, the IRS is saying, look, you have until the end of 2020 to claim the stimulus money. So you need to go ahead and file that by the end of 2020 in order to be eligible to get this, you know, these economic impact payments. Does that make sense?
It does. And the information for those tuning in live, especially, we'll also archive this on our website and on our Facebook page. But for those who are tuning in right now, you can go to Augusta Free Press, open up another window, maybe on another device. You can keep watching us, right? But it's the top story on the front page of the Augusta Free Press front page site right now. So it has a lot of the questions to those frequently asked or answers to the frequently asked questions, and also the links to the IRS website, which basically are just going to take you to more frequently asked questions. But the information is readily available right there and hopefully answer your questions as far as that goes.
Well, and it seems like a lot of people are stepping up right now as far as, you know, the Stanton Creative Community Fund, you know, the City of Waynesboro, Harrisonburg, Downtown Renaissance, things like that. They're all stepping up and trying to provide solutions particular to small businesses as well. And so if you're a small business who's been impacted in any way by COVID-19, we have been trying to post those resources on AugustaFreePress.com for you as well. And it may be based on locality. I mean, the Small Business Administration is obviously providing some grants up to $10,000. That online portal to submit that grant request is already open. So anytime we're getting information, whether it's the Stanton Creative Community Fund, or like I said, Downtown Renaissance, or the Small Business Administration, any of those kinds of things that are coming forward, either in terms of loans or grants, we're posting that information generally as a story on Augusta Free Press. But there's also a one-stop shop that you can go to on Augusta Free Press, which is a link section. We have a link section on the front page. If you go to our mobile site at AugustaFreePress.com, or on our desktop site, in the right-hand column is a link page for AFP coronavirus links. And if you click on that, we're posting all the information that we know related to, you know, small businesses and how you can get support during this time.
Yeah. In fact, one story we posted this morning, Farmers and Merchants Bank, F&M Bank, Stanton Creative Community Fund offering small business relief, a $25,000 loan fund. That's just one of the many things that's available out there. The loans offered through this program are 0% interest, term of up to 3 years, amounts ranging from $1,000 to $5,000. For each principal payment made, dollars matched one-to-one, so a borrower essentially receives 50% loan forgiveness. This is just one of the tools in the arsenal for local businesses in our area. I know the Small Business Administration through the Small Business Development Center up in Harrisonburg, which serves a bigger region than just, you know, Stanton, Waynesboro, Augusta, also has some monies available. And so there's a lot of resources out there, and we have links to those resources on our website, which is very important for people.
And I think people are saying, you know, I've seen a lot of people talking on social media and that kind of thing, that it's very difficult to get through on the phone lines to some of these places right now, because as you can imagine, there's a lot of small businesses with questions. But again, if you can utilize some of the online services, the Small Business Administration in particular, their application is online. So if you can fill that out online, and when they first came out, it was a paper only process, but they've got that online now. So I think that if you utilize that technology, you know, you might find a quicker response for these kinds of things. So, and of course, if you have questions, you know, the Small Business Administration is there to help. But, you know, like for me, I had a specific question about that Small Business Administration grant, and my accountant was able to respond to me by email very quickly on that. So that might be another resource for you as well.
So switching gears a little bit for just a couple of minutes, healthcare news. The first thing I would want to highlight is actually something we wrote about this morning as well. The Trump administration apparently blocking special Obamacare enrollment. There'd been talk at the federal level about reopening enrollment in healthcare.gov. You know, there are close to 30 million Americans who don't have health insurance. And this doesn't apparently impact people who just recently lost a job and thus lost their workplace health insurance. People who are in that situation can still go apply under the Obamacare plan, the healthcare.gov plan. But there had been a push to open it back up to people, again, those 30 million or so people in the United States who don't have health insurance, to give them the ability to enroll in healthcare.gov. Into one of those plans. And the administration last week signaled that it was at least considering the idea, and apparently today is saying that it won't. So, and that it's considering other options, though, not talking about what those other options might be. So a little frustrating point there. You know, here we're dealing with a pandemic. We're dealing with an epidemic, certainly in the United States, from the standpoint of the spread in the United States. And yet, you know, people who will not have access to healthcare, that'll just make them maybe less likely to go seek healthcare. So some distressing news there at the federal level.
Some other news on Augusta Free Press related to insurance. And again, you can go to AugustaFreePress.com. I just searched insurance in the right-hand sidebar to pull up this story because I knew you had written it. I think it was published on Sunday. Is that if you're one of those people who did just lose your job, you know, and maybe it's just a temporary furlough, maybe it's you're laid off, maybe it's, you know, they're not sure if they're going to reopen, but, you know, those kinds of things are happening every single day. There are options available, and you have a story that you posted from, I believe the information comes from the SEC Bureau of Insurance, but it specifically gives some options for people who have just been laid off to make sure that your insurance coverage does continue for your family. And there's things about, like, yes, the insurance marketplace might be open for you. You may be able to extend your coverage through a Consolidated Budget Reconciliation Act for up to 18 months, using COBRA basically. And then also, you know, it is a qualifying event. So you might be able to get on your spouse's plan or something when you're not normally able to in the middle of the year. So there's a lot of options. The other thing is that you might qualify for Medicaid, and you've never, you know, applied for that before either. So if you're interested in some of those in health insurance options, if you've recently lost your job or you know someone that has, if you go to Augusta Free Press, and like I said, I just went to the front page of Augusta Free Press on the desktop site and I searched insurance, and I think it was the second story that came up. So there's some information there about if you're concerned about health insurance going forward as well.
Yeah, and we have a story on our front page and also in our coronavirus section, COVID-19 section, specific to unemployment insurance. The Virginia Employment Commission sent out a note yesterday, and we wrote a story based on that. Just some questions, not quite a question and answer like the story we have on the employment worker compensation thing, but still sort of in a similar vein, just answering some questions. For you can qualify for under the CARES Act, that's basically the federal plan, the $2.2 trillion stimulus. And in regard to the Virginia Unemployment Insurance Program, including that workers who are not eligible under current state law, and this is an important distinction to make, because under Virginia state law, it's more restrictive than under the federal law. Gig economy workers, that would be people like Uber drivers, Lyft drivers, other people who have sort of cobbled together their own job out of several gig jobs, as we call them now. Self-employed individuals, workers paid by 1099, may be eligible for unemployment under the CARES Act. In fact, they're going to be under the federal CARES Act. So, but what this points out, though, is that this story, as you'll see, points out that the federal government is still, I mean, paperwork is paperwork. When talking about government, when we talk about red tape, the government's still preparing to issue detailed guidance on how states are proceeding. So that means it's not out yet. That guidance is not out yet. So once the federal government issues guidance, as we wrote yesterday, it will take some time to develop and implement changes. That just means what you need to do now is, if you're in the situation, if you haven't already done this, I'm sure a lot of folks who have been furloughed have already gone through this process. But if you haven't, if you're waiting for something, stop waiting. Get through the process now. Go and fill out for both the health insurance. If you've lost your job and you need to, you know, go through healthcare.gov. Also go to vec.virginia.gov regarding your unemployment benefits, because there's no time to wait. Go through the process now. Let the government sort things out, but don't hesitate to do that.
I think I was talking with a friend, you know, we have a lot of friends in the media business throughout the state of Virginia and even outside of the state of Virginia. And, you know, you may have heard the news that Gannett and some other newspapers are facing furloughs right now. And so if you're facing a furlough and you're working for a media company, maybe you've dealt with unemployment before and you're like, oh, I have to apply for 3 jobs a week and I have to report in every Sunday and, you know, that kind of thing. The only thing I would say is, based on what I've read, is it wouldn't hurt for you to get in touch and to try to file an unemployment claim if you're being furloughed, because my understanding is that with this additional funding that's been provided at the national level, that even if you're just losing hours, you're eligible for some reimbursement. So I think that it would be worthwhile to at least explore those options, because even if you're out of work 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, as some of these furloughs are happening over the next couple of months, I think that, you know, newspaper employees already struggle, because in most cases they're their salary isn't that high. You know, it's one of those jobs that pays 30 to 40,000 in most cases. And so, you know, they're struggling too. And so I gave this one particular reporter advice that I was chatting with yesterday, which is, it doesn't hurt to look into it. Yes, you're going to probably get that stimulus check that's coming from the federal government, and that will help. But if there's other resources available, you might as well take advantage of those as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, we in the media business, we report on so many things, and it seems that few of them actually impact, you know, people in our business. And yes, the Gannett Company, which is the parent company of, among other newspapers in America, the News Leader, one of our local colleague newspapers in the area, and also the parent company of the News Virginia, both, you know, basically instituting furloughs for employees. So, you know, yeah, the media is affected too. You know, certainly people are clicking more, they're watching more, they're wanting to learn more information, but yet also the media business has been impacted by the obvious expected downturn in advertising. So everybody's affected by this. Every industry is affected by this. I'm reading about hospitals that are cutting, not local here, but there's a hospital system out west in Utah that's actually cutting wages for hospital staff and doctors. That one issue is that the COVID-19 hasn't hit as strong there yet. And also, though, hospitals are businesses too, at least in the United States, they're businesses. And when you have to cut treatment plans, when you have to cancel surgeries, et cetera, those are money makers for hospitals. And those being cut means less money coming in. So even the healthcare industry is impacted by this economically. A lot of folks biting the bullet right now from this. And we're all impacted and we're all trying to get through it together. And hey, I thought I'd mention, Crystal, something we wrote about yesterday on another health-related note. This is actually more public health-related than insurance-related. About Augusta Health and its readiness in the event of the expected surge in cases. We still haven't had it here yet. As of the moment we're talking right now, 10:25 Eastern on Wednesday, still just 5 confirmed local cases in Stanton, Waynesboro, Augusta County. But we know that's going to go up. We don't know how high it's going to go up, but we know it's going to go up. And so a lot of questions in the local media the last few weeks about Augusta Health's readiness in the event of a possible surge. Augusta Health yesterday sent us here in the media and also made available for public consumption a white paper that it had prepared, basically detailing what it's done. And I thought, Crystal, if it's okay, I'd go over some of those highlights because I think it reassured me to read this, and it may reassure our viewers. And certainly if anybody's got questions, feel free to comment and we'll try to answer your questions.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest as well. Just a reminder here, too, that we're talking about headlines on AugustaFreePress.com. But of course, if there's questions that you have that maybe we're able to answer, or maybe that you'd like to see a story written on, certainly put that in your comments here on Facebook, and we'll be glad to try to address those either in a future, I don't know what we call this, news update, since we're on Facebook Live, a future news update, a podcast, or maybe even a story. So feel free to weigh in as you're listening to us. And yeah, like you, Chris, I was very impressed that Augusta Health put forward their white plan. It was available on social media to the public yesterday and on their website. So, but yeah, I'll let you kind of outline some of those things that were in that.
Yeah, the white paper on the surge plan. And a surge plan just implies, okay, there's something that's going to happen that could lead to a mass casualty event. It could be, you know, so you have to have surge plans in place for when I say mass casualty event. You know, certainly a sickness can be that. It could be a natural disaster. I mean, so hospitals have to be ready for excess capacity in a short period of time. Certainly a natural disaster like a hurricane or a tornado outbreak would lead to a different kind of surge as opposed to you know, a flu pandemic or some other pneumonia pandemic, or in the case of COVID-19. This, because that would be a sustained longer term, you know, the short term versus longer term. So back in October, Augusta Health participated in a program to evaluate its ability, according to the piece we wrote yesterday, to implement a surge plan. They worked, including with a fire management consultant, an emergency management consultant. They observed every unit at the hospital, tried to come up with some ideas for how they could, implement a surge plan. And what's interesting about this is October, there was no thought of COVID-19. This wasn't done as a preparation for anything that was foreseen as a possibility. This was just something that you do in a normal course of operations at a hospital. The response, though, does, you know, provide, from Augusta Health standpoint, certainly a foundation for their response. Adjustments made in line with that assessment done back in October that have already been put in place at Augusta Health include basically the important thing is here, the headline, we wrote this as the lead to our story. We thought this was the most significant part of this. Augusta Health says it's prepared for a surge of up to 50% above its licensed bed status. By state law, they're only required to be able to accommodate a surge of 20% or more the licensed bed status. So that's an important distinction. Augusta Health feels like it's got measures in place that will allow it to withstand a tremendous surge, a much bigger than even state mandated surge. To be able to ramp up, the first floor surgical unit, Joint Center at Augusta Health, have already been re-engineered to be a specific respiratory care unit. So that, and in fact, we know that's already been done here locally. The entire first floor is also now a negative pressure zone. The ground floor skilled and rehab units will be re-engineered to take care of regular medical patients. So you still have to, obviously, even with the surge in patients from COVID-19 or, you know, whatever something may be, a mass casualty event, you still have to be able to accommodate your regular patients. And so that there's plans in place for that. The emergency department has added 11 negative pressure zone rooms. Basically, what those are is that those don't allow air out. So that's important for reducing or eliminating possible transmission of a virus. Between the emergency department and inpatient areas, Augusta Health has added 32 additional isolation rooms for a current total of 50 isolation rooms at the hospital. So they've more than doubled their, or not quite more than doubled, but close to 175% doubling or expanding their capacity there.
Right.
Other units such as the rehab unit, the post-anesthesia care unit, and the endoscopy unit can be re-engineered to care for patients as needed. So those haven't been done yet, but they've identified those areas can be re-engineered to care for patients as needed, either COVID patients or your standard patients. A drive-through testing facility already activated or is ready to be activated at Waynesboro Urgent Care. We know that because it's just one of these funny things of life. We were chatting at an appropriate physical distance with one of our neighbors who's an electrician, and his company actually worked on that project with Augusta Health at the Waynesboro Urgent Care. And that was a couple of weeks ago. So that's been in place. The ability to ramp up drive-through testing is in place, has been for a couple of weeks at Augusta Health. We know that just from chatting with our neighbors. Planning also includes providing for separation of patients with respiratory illness from those with other medical conditions. This is important when you hear the numbers from Italy, a country one-fifth of our size that actually has a tremendous death toll right now. One of the issues early in the process that has been identified as a problem probably in Italy that led to higher than expected and probably needed death rates there is that hospitals didn't immediately sort of separate those patients out, the COVID patients from their normal patients, and the virus was able to take hold in the normal hospital population as a result. Plans in place to do that at Augusta Health. Other planning includes separate triage areas and treatment zones in the emergency department, directing patients with respiratory symptoms to the assessment center of Waynesboro Urgent Care, directing patients with other urgent care issues to alternative urgent care locations, separate units on different floors. That's just another more talking about how to flesh those out and separate those out. I'll throw a couple more things at you, Chris, and you may have questions, and our viewers may have questions too. This was done basically a year ago to address high volumes of patients during flu season. The last couple of flu seasons have actually been pretty substantial. I mean, actually two of the last three flu seasons. Last year's flu season itself was actually sort of an average flu season, but the 2018 flu season, more than 60,000 deaths in the United States associated with that flu season. And actually, the current flu season that we're in, and which would be wrapping up, normally flu season goes from October to April, another 60,000 deaths, according to CDC in the United States flu season. So in between those two flu seasons, hospitals across the country were reassessing what they could do in the event that perhaps there would be even a more virulent strain of flu going around. And so that, again, the preparation done there has been helpful in COVID-19. The plan was activated when department admissions escalated, the entire staff aware and able to provide support as needed. With new models and predictions, Augusta Health staff has adapted a surge plan to address its needs, actually developing an algorithm to incorporate capacity, admissions to hospital, discharges from the hospital, et cetera. Basically, they're checking this twice a day. And it was emphasized in his white paper that there are twice a day assessments done, both of the algorithm, but also the top hospital administration staff are looking at numbers. They're getting reports from the state and federal governments and looking at reports from various sources to try to get the best sense of what needs to be done. This isn't something that essentially, they're just waiting to see what happens. They're definitely very proactive in this. The incident command management team meeting twice daily, that was another emphasis point. They've taken a lot of steps, and I think that it's important to point all this out because there had been some sort of very negative coverage in local media about whether or not Augusta Health was ready to meet an anticipated surge, and you never know. I mean, you know, surges can go beyond what expectations are, but from every respect here, reading through the surge plan, Augusta Health is as ready and actually more ready than the state even requires them to be.
So you can read more about that if you need to on AugustaFreePress.com. The other thing I just wanted to mention is you had mentioned the assessment center set up at the Waynesboro Urgent Care. But in addition to that, Augusta Health has set up a telephone line that you can call for advice, especially if you or someone you know are experiencing COVID-19 symptoms. That phone number I'm going to give to you right now, but it's also on our website. If you look again at that AFP coronavirus link section, you can find the information there. But the phone number for that advice center for the call center for Augusta Health is 540-332-5122. And of course, if you're sick or you have an emergency, you can still call 911, but they are, you know, trying to push some of those COVID-19 calls directly to that call center so they can address whether or not you need to come in for a test or something like that. At the end of the day, if you come in for a test, even if you test positive, at this time, you know, this is a virus. So prescription drugs that you're used to being prescribed for other things don't work on this particular virus. So there's not even any necessarily medication that can be prescribed. It's just you knowing whether or not you have, you know, COVID-19. I thought, Chris, if it was okay with you, maybe one thing that we could talk about as well is you are a number cruncher, and that's what makes you a great journalist. And one of the things that, you know, we've been sharing lately are stories about the number of COVID-19 cases that are in our area. And there's some people who post, like, if I share that on my social media or, you know, on the Augusta Free Press Facebook page, people raise alarm with the fact that now we have cases in Waynesboro, Stanton, Augusta. Pretty much every location in Central Virginia has at least one case that's been announced, and those numbers kind of come in daily. And so we, of course, report about that because that's news. But on the other hand, the reason that we weren't getting numbers before, you know, in the last few months is because people in this area just simply weren't being tested. So I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about that, Chris, because obviously now that we are testing people, now that the tests are becoming more readily available, again, in most cases, you still have to meet certain criteria before the health place that you go to is going to test you. But if you meet that criteria and you're tested, obviously we're going to have some positive cases. So it's not necessarily that just because you see a case pop up in Waynesboro that all of a sudden there should be alarm.
I would agree. And one, you said months. This is we're maybe a month into this and probably 3 weeks into this from the United States standpoint. There are some people tracing the origins of the outbreak. Of course, we know Washington State, where our good friend Jerry Carter now lives, a former Valley resident. They were dealing with this a lot sooner because there was an influx in a nursing facility there a couple of months ago, and that seemed to be the extent of it in the United States. But definitely, you know, this virus originated in China. It's spread since. It didn't get suppressed there. The Wuhan region in China is a place that has a lot of ties to international business. It's a very, very rich area in terms of manufacturing and commerce worldwide. So a lot of people, you know, traveling in, a lot of people traveling out, and as a result of the early steps to mitigate and suppress not effective, and it got out, if you want to say. And so how that relates to here. When you see the explosion of cases in a place like, say, New York City, geographically a very different area than the Waynesboro, Stanton, Augusta area. And I know we're talking to people theoretically worldwide on Facebook. So, circumstances where you live may be similar to New York, may be very different to New York, et cetera. And by the way, a quick update here. I'm watching a person walk down the street with a wagon, and they're carrying a dog, Crystal. So that's just, I wish I had my camera. I'm going to take a picture of that.
Well, they're getting some fresh air. It is a little cold today here in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, I think around 40 some degrees, but I'm glad they're getting outside.
Fresh air, fresh air. And that's probably the dog right now walking by that's causing our dogs to bark. When you look at an area like New York City, people live close together. They work close together. A lot of apartment living in a place like that, not a lot of cars. So you have people who have to use public transit, whether it be buses or trains to get around. Your stores are going to be more compact and that kind of thing. And so you can see why the failure of, the failure of the mayor there, Bill de Blasio, to aggressively, very early on, try to mitigate and suppress there. It's why you have the explosion of cases there. Very tragic. But the slow response at the local level there has led to a massive problem in New York City, and hopefully that can be lessened now that we have measures in place there and nationwide to physical distance. But in a place like Waynesboro, Stanton, Augusta, yeah, there are now 5 confirmed cases. Generally speaking, we don't live as close together as people in a place like New York City or other really densely compact urban areas. I've mentioned, I know on podcasts that, you know, our house, we live in the city of Waynesboro, but we have a 1/4 acre of land with our property. You know, I can see our next door neighbor's house, but it's not that close, you know, and they can be out in their yard. We can be out in our yard and not interact. And we have neighbors behind us similar. The plots here are similar. And so, we've implemented in Virginia, we're 21 days, I think now, or 20 or 21 days into some degree of physical distancing. Certainly it's ratcheted up a couple of times. And as of Monday, it's even more extreme here in Virginia in terms of the physical distancing. And so, those physical distancing measures, when you look at the numbers at the macro level, nationwide and state by state, the physical distancing measures seem to be working in terms of keeping us from just being in contact with each other. And from an epidemiological standpoint, the less contact we have with each other, the less likelihood of spread of virus. And so we already live in an area that isn't densely compact geographically. The important thing, though, for people in Stanton, Waynesboro, Augusta to note is that as long as you follow the physical distancing guidelines, as long as you don't make unnecessary trips out, you don't go to the grocery store every day. It's been advised, make one trip a week. Don't run to the store every day and try to stock up. We kind of are where we are. Do your normal shopping, but, you know, get stuff when you need it and only when you need it. You know, don't make the run in, don't make the pop in. Don't go grocery shopping just because you're bored at home. And when you do go grocery shopping, it's actually recommended. I've seen this, Crystal, and I think it's very important to point out. You might have been inclined, and certainly before March 9th or March 10th, when you went to the grocery store, it might be your husband and wife. And if you have kids, you take your kids with you and everybody kind of piles in together. We all go to the store and get what we want. It's being recommended now for the safety of everyone that has just have one person go. Just have one person represent the family. And so the less people that are in stores, the better. Observe those social distancing measures, physical distancing measures. Don't just because you're in a store and you see a good friend, go up and give them a hug. You got to be smart about this, and so there are a lot of things we can do locally. And if you do all those things, that's not to say you're not going to be exposed to coronavirus. There are chances you can. You might go to a store and touch something and, you know, who knows. But if you observe the distancing guidelines, we can keep this under wraps. And that's what we're trying to do now, you know. Don't lament the fact that we know through at least April 30th, things are going to be where they are now. It's only April 1st. That's a long time to think, 4 weeks and a day is a long time to think that we have to continue doing this. We've already been doing it for almost 3 weeks now. But if we do this, we can keep the number of people who need to go to Augusta Health down well below their surge capacity. That's an important thing. We can keep the number of deaths down. You're hearing some scary numbers right now. At the federal level, 100,000, maybe 200,000 deaths. I'm seeing numbers that are also lower than that from, I don't want to say more trusted sources. The White House has its sources. The federal government, the media have their sources. A University of Washington study had the number lower because of social distancing being put in place and maintaining those guidelines in place. We can have lower numbers. But still, anybody dying from this is a tragedy. So, if you're out there watching right now, we don't know why certain people get a more severe case of COVID-19 than others. It's not just seniors. It's not just people with pre-existing conditions. Roughly 1 out of 5 cases of those who end up in ICUs are people without underlying conditions who are not seniors. So, the odds are much worse, obviously, for people who are older and have underlying conditions. But we don't know why the younger people who don't have conditions are in some cases, extreme cases, end up with worse virus of this. But the best thing you can do is protect yourself. Follow the guidelines. Just be smart about it. It sucks right now that we're all in this situation, but we can get out of the situation if we just follow the guidelines. And that's the important message here.
Well, and I think if you have a question about something, you know, Google it, because quite frankly, there's so much information out there. But make sure, you know, you're looking at trusted news sources. You know, when you're Googling that, you're looking at something from the CDC or someone of that nature.
Well, let me interject too, Crystal, because trusted news sources, I mean, I'm honest. We talked about this yesterday. There, if you see a headline that looks sensational, it probably is sensational. And when I say sensational, there were headlines yesterday, for example, that a Boston University researcher said that droplets from a person coming out of their mouth can travel 27 feet and get you sick. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the guy who we didn't know 3 weeks ago, we now know he's the expert on this. He was asked about this at the president's press conference yesterday. He was actually incensed that this researcher put this information out in this way. He said 27 feet would be a person winding back at chew and spitting out as hard as they can, 27 feet. He said that it was just irresponsible for that particular researcher to throw that out there. And then thus implying that, you know, those of us in the media, and not us, we're not ones throwing this out there, but there are plenty of people in the media looking for the absolute worst thing they can do to ruin your day. This is bad enough. People are dying. 900 plus people in the United States died yesterday from coronavirus. You can't make that any worse. You know, I'll throw it out there. Yeah, look for trusted sources of information. But, you know, again, if it looks too good to be true or looks too bad to be true, just winnow that out. And also winnow out, there was something, this has nothing to do with public health, but for a second, I'll throw it, it feels consistent with what we're talking about right now, I'll throw it in. An NFL reporter, Adam Schefter, was talking about how the NFL should just stop all the talk about the draft and stop all the talk about free agency. We need to, you know, buckle down and people are dying. I disagree with that. I disagree with the fact that we should all be walking around. Okay, people will remember, if you're a fan of the Monty Python movies like I am, and unfortunately Crystal is not, but she's my wife and she has to watch these silly things with me from time to time. The Monty Python movies do a great job of making fun of medieval times. And there was a group of monks from medieval times that they felt like they weren't allowed to be happy. So they walked around and beat themselves in the head with a piece of wood. And that was the way they reminded themselves not to be happy about the world. We don't have to walk around today beating ourselves in the head with a stick. You know, those of us who are at home, those of us who are trying to avoid getting coronavirus, trying to avoid spreading it to others, we still need to build a normalcy that is manageable. We still, and you see in the room I'm in right now, this is normally my sports podcast room. I'm still doing sports podcasts. I got a pool table behind me.
Yeah, I was thinking this subject was sports podcasting, but it's okay.
You know what I'm saying? You need to be able to have some normalcy to life. You need to be able to, the person walking down the street right a few minutes ago that I saw walking their dog in a wagon, you need to do that. You need to have some fun. Because it's, you know, if we're going to all go around for the next 4 weeks in a day beating ourselves in the head with a stick, this is not going to work out for anybody. That's not going to last for a couple of days, and people are going to say, screw it, screw the physical distancing guidelines. We're just going to go out and do stuff, and what the hell? And we can't have that be the case. So those who are telling you don't have fun, those who are telling you feel guilty if you're posting things online about your dogs or about your kids or about your work situation, you know, just tell those people to shove it, because you need to get through this from a mental standpoint. You need to be able to have some normalcy that is actually manageable. And so that's the message I'm going to give people.
Okay. Well, speaking of normalcy, today is April 1st and April Fool's Day. And I did see a couple people start sharing even as early as yesterday, some things on Facebook about how the school year is officially going to have to be repeated next year. Now, I don't think that's a good April Fool's Day joke, because I think that too many people might actually read that and take it seriously. I happened to look at it just because I saw that it was a link to a very unreliable, like, you know, the link was to some site that I had never heard of, you know, so you click on it. And of course, it tells you, hi, April Fools, you know, or whatever. But, you know, I think that, again, people are having a little fun with that. But because of what's happening right now, I fear that people are going to look at that and think that that's actually true. And it's really up to individual localities how things are handled going forward. And certainly I haven't heard any news of any localities saying you're going to have to repeat your school year. So that's just one thing. The other thing I've had up on my screen here for just a minute, Chris, that I wanted to mention, and actually, even though I've had it up on my screen for probably 20 minutes, Fiona Allison, who's listening in right now, had posted some information or had sent me a note about the CDC guidelines related to masks. You know, you were talking about going to grocery stores once a week and things like that. Up until now, the CDC has really been saying, you know, leave the mask for the medical professionals. And unless you're someone who's at high risk, you know, a senior or someone who's recently had surgery or cancer or things like that, because of the shortages and things like that, they were really only recommending high risk people wear those masks out in public. You and I know we were at the ABC store a few days ago and we ran into a young couple both wearing masks. And I've seen people wearing masks at grocery stores and things like that as well. And I thought, well, I don't have a mask. And certainly they're not very easy to come by. As you know, local hospitals and clinics and things like that have been requesting those. And unfortunately, as the governor has said, right now states and all these individual hospitals and things like that are all kind of bidding against each other for the available what they call PPEs that are available on the market right now. And so that's making it very challenging to really get the numbers that you need. As the governor said, and I agree with, you know, we really do need a national solution where we're bidding at the United States and then they're somehow dispersed among those that need them. But that aside, the CDC is starting to shift a little bit. They haven't actually put out official guidelines yet. As of yesterday, they're just starting to say that it may be that they do recommend that the general public is going to be requested to wear those out in public for a period of time. And they haven't said exactly what that period of time might be yet. But it's certainly something that's being discussed actively right now. You know, I said to you, you know, well, where do I get a mask? I mean, right now there's some directions online and that kind of thing for homemade masks. Those seem to be an option, but again, not as good as this. I think it's called like N95, this mask that that medical professionals are using and things of that nature. So I think within the coming days, the CDC may make some additional recommendations and not just recommend that those high-risk people are wearing it, but that more people are. And this gets back to what we were just generally talking about, you know, prior to this, which was just the whole idea that if we're following social distancing guidelines, you know, if we eventually are wearing masks when we go out in public, at least taking precautions when we go out in public, we're washing our hands, we're using hand sanitizer, we're doing these things that we're supposed to be doing, we're not gathering in groups of 10 or more, you know, we're all being very cautious, then there's a strong possibility that we won't see anything near the numbers that are being predicted right now. And that, you know, there will be some naysayers who say, I don't know why we shut down everything considering the flu is much worse than this, or other, you know, things are much worse than this, when it may just be that because we took the precautions necessary that we're limiting the number of cases. We've seen in headlines, and we talked about some of these in our update yesterday, that when people do get together and they're, you know, they were defying these orders basically and getting together in groups of 50 or more or having these coronavirus parties and things like that, that people are coming out of that, three or four people, you know, generally with symptoms. And so all of a sudden you're looking at it and saying, you know, those of us who are doing what we're supposed to be doing, you know, the reason that we may not see cases is because we're following the guidelines that are out there. And the other thing that I just wanted to mention, and this is kind of nationwide that we've seen those headlines, but the stay-at-home order that was issued by Governor Ralph Northam, you know, to me is just giving teeth to this. You're seeing nationwide that these hospitals, whether they're, I'm sorry, not hospitals, these churches that we're still meeting, these mega churches in Florida and Louisiana and things like that, those people are being actually arrested right now if they're defying the orders of their states. And in those cases where they're having these mass meetings of people, you know, they can be charged with, in Virginia, it's a class 1 misdemeanor. So I think that's the main reason that the governor put forth what he did, just to give some teeth to say, look, we said no more than 10 people. And if you're not following that guideline, you know, it's with the exception of essential businesses, essential manufacturers, grocery stores, things like that. But if you're not following the guidelines of 10 or less people or following the social distancing guidelines, there could be repercussions.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've said this for a long time. I'm someone, of course, a lot of folks know me as a sports guy because I've done sports writing and broadcasting for 25 years. But my original background. My degree from the University of Virginia is in constitutional law. So, and I've said this for a long, long time. You can't legislate common sense, unfortunately. And that was something I've been reading about this for a couple of months. You know, one way China has been able to get back to some normalcy here in the last couple of weeks is because China is a authoritarian society. And so in authoritarian societies, the government tells you what to do and you do it. And if you don't do it, then drastic repercussions happen. And there were people questioning even as, you know, a couple months ago, and it's now April, so 3 months ago, back in January when this first popped up in China, and China made its very strong response. How would those kind of responses work in the West, just generally speaking, Western, more, you know, democracies, liberal, more countries? How would that work here? And it's clearly the case that, not only in authoritarian societies do governments have the ability to say we're going to do things and we're going to enforce them, but people who live in, who've grown up in that environment, have lived and been cultured in that environment, they don't, not as many of them certainly question authority. You know, if you live in a place where you've not really been free to do what you want to do, it's not born into you to rebel against that. There's certainly exceptions, but here in the United States, we're the exact opposite. We all distrust authority. We all hate authority. We all hate government. We all hate big business. We hate everything here. So when people tell you to do things, this is why we threw tea in the harbor in Boston in the 1770s. It's why we fought the American Revolution. It's why we've done everything we've done for the last 240 years, because we distrust authority. So being told it's for your own good, to get this virus out of here, you need to do certain things, and those certain things involve you want to go have margaritas on Friday night at your favorite Mexican restaurant for the next four or five Friday nights, you can't do that. You want to watch baseball or basketball, guess what, they ain't gonna be on. And it's tough because, you know, we don't like being told you can't do things. We respond when we are told you can't do things. We're going to do them anyway. And so what have we seen? The beaches at Virginia Beach in Norfolk this weekend, not to mention Florida, not to mention other places, packed to the gills. Those coronavirus parties that people are having, churches who were saying, we'll just pray to God and God will take care of us. I'm reminded there of this, you know, the old story about the person in the flood, and they're on their house. You know, the flood rises up above their first floor. They go to the second floor. Somebody comes to save them in a boat. Nope, God's going to save me. Water goes up by the second floor. They're on the roof. Nope, God's going to save me. And then they die and they ask God, hey, where were you? Hey, I sent two boats for you. These are the two boats. The two boats right now are just stay home. Just go get your groceries. If you've got to work, obviously, go to work. But be careful at work. Do all the things you need to do there. But this is a problem for us. I mean, to get rid of this virus right now, we don't have a vaccine. People who get really sick, as you mentioned a little earlier, Crystal, there are treatments. It's not like if you're laying in a hospital with COVID and you're in bad shape, they're not treating you. It's just that we don't know what works and what doesn't work. So they're stabbing in the dark. I hate to use this analogy, but I guess I will. Think of in the 16th century, you used to think that using leeches to get the blood out. I mean, we're no further along than that with this coronavirus right now. We don't know what treatments work, what doesn't work. They're just trying things from a standpoint. And so no vaccine, no known effective treatments. Right now, the best way for this to go away is for us just to reduce the number of cases and have it die out sort of on its own. I mean, it's just the only solution we've got. And the only way that works is if we stay at physical distance from each other so that it can't spread. So,
right. And Frank Carey posted something just simply saying that, you know, he's noting that many are feeling their rights are infringed by these safety precautions. And of course, you know, he's right about that. That's what you were just talking about. You know, in a lot of ways, people feel like, you know, the government shouldn't be able to tell them to stay home. But in this case, you know, it may save many lives. And we talked yesterday a lot about suicide prevention and mental health and that kind of thing. And sometimes precautions do need to be made to save lives. So I'm not a government person. It's just my personal opinion in this case. And I feel like,
you know, Crystal, me, you've heard me ranting around our office and our house the last couple of weeks. I that degree in constitutional law, I very much am a civil libertarian, and that applies in lots of ways to lots of other things. But in this case, yeah, there is an inclination among Americans, among Westerners, but certainly among Americans, I think we probably lead this, to say we don't like being told what to do. But in this case, if you can just internalize it, this is what my recommendation would be for people out there like me who don't like being told what to do. Just internalize it and say it's for the best. And if what happens in a few, if we get to April 30th and somehow magically, things are dramatically better by April 30th. And we look back and say, man, you know, they were way off on all those numbers. It didn't materialize in any way, shape or form the way they said. If that's the worst thing we can say, hallelujah, as far as that goes. And then we'll just get back to normal and life will go on. It probably won't quite be that miraculous. There's going to be some measures in place for some time, I imagine. Not the measures we're in right now. I don't want to alarm people because I'm not trying to alarm myself. But if April 30th is the date, it's not like May 1st. I said this yesterday. It's worth reinforcing. It's not like May 1st. You're going to go out to a huge concert with 30,000 people. You're not going to go to a basketball game or a baseball game with 50,000 people. It's just not going to be the case. There are going to be measures in place for some time to try to maintain control over this virus, because until we have a vaccine, we can't let off completely. We can let off the brakes a little bit, and that's going to be important. We're going to let off the brakes for a while, hopefully, after we get it down. We may go back in the fall or winter if we don't have a vaccine in place, which likely we won't. If we don't have treatments in place, which I'm not convinced that by the fall and winter, we won't have effective treatments in place. I'm not a doctor, obviously, but I'm just from everything. And I've been reading more about this than I've ever read in my life. There does seem to be a consensus of opinion that by the fall and winter, we'll be much, much better prepared, certainly than we are now, which is not at all prepared. We'll have been able to ramp up our capacity, for example, of ventilators. That's a simple thing. But right now, yes, we can't have enough ventilators in place right now. There's just no way. They're hard to build. It takes a while to build them. By the fall and winter, we'll have enough of those. We'll know by the fall and winter. Augusta Health Surge Plan, we talked about at length a few minutes ago. They'll have a test of it. They'll have a real-life test of it. Hospitals across the country will have a real-life test of it. And we'll know by the fall and winter what we need, what we don't need.
That's another point too. You know, listener Frank Carey again asked the question, what if there are mandatory vaccinations? How will people react to that? You know, time will tell. You know, I don't know that yeah. There's been talk about mandatory vaccinations, but again, we don't have a solution at this point. Well, so I think certainly the government would have to make that kind of thing available for free.
There are plenty of anti-vaxxers out there. That's a great point from Frank. And there are already memes going about anti-vaxxers and how they respond to that. And there will be people who resist to that. And unfortunately, just like in cases where you've seen school systems affected by measles outbreaks because anti-vaxxers kids, getting childhood diseases that were eradicated largely 50 years ago, that could be an issue for those people. They'll be at risk. By the fall, we'll have ventilators, we'll have surge plans that will have been tested in real life situations. We'll also have a lot of people who will have developed antibodies to this because they've been exposed, the population's been exposed. They won't be at risk, again in the fall. So, I mean, by the fall, yeah, we may have to do some physical distancing of some sort again in the fall or winter, maybe. And certainly not to the level I wouldn't assume at this point, like we're having to do right now, but we may have to do some things different in the fall and winter, just because until we have a vaccine in place, one more season of this is certainly a very strong possibility. And again, I'm not saying another season of complete shutdown of the world, but some measures that are different than what you're used to normally, I would not rule out for fall and winter of 2020, 2021. But we got to do what we got to do now so that we can just get back to normal as soon as possible. So we can get our economy going again, so we can get life going again. The harder we do this now, the quicker we can sort of get through this now and get back to normal. If we relax on this at all, and there are, Crystal, you mentioned, there are different level of reactions in states and localities across the country. The longer we take to just bite down on it right now, the longer this is going to persist in our population and the longer that pain is going to be. So if we can just embrace it And it's not in our nature to, in America, it's not in our nature to say, let's do what we need to do. Let's do what the experts tell us to do. We don't like experts in this country for whatever reason. We don't like smart people in this country. But if we could just listen to them for a few weeks, we can go back to ignoring them on everything else here, you know, in short order.
Okay. Well, so just to kind of wrap up too, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is that I follow a lot of concerts and things of that nature on social media, and it seems like most have canceled through at least the end of May. So again, they're kind of thinking along the same lines you are, Chris, that even if these guidelines are lifted April 30th or some point thereafter, that there's still not going to be a rush. There's not going to be a lot of people that want to go immediately and get into crowds, you know, of thousands and thousands of people. We had bought season tickets for this upcoming season for the Washington Nationals. And I know I'm personally very hesitant to think that we would even go to a single game this coming season. So, and there may not be the opportunity to do so regardless, because those kinds of decisions will have to be made in coming months as restrictions are lifted.
I want to disagree with you. If we get this down, and some of the models I'm suggesting or seeing are suggesting that we'll get this under control by, you know, June 1st. I mean, to a degree where the number of deaths per day is in single digits, perhaps, if we get this under control the way some of the models are suggesting. There could be some normalcy this summer, at least. I think by the fall, again, assuming that we do what we're supposed to do now, there will be 50,000 or plus at football games in the fall again. So, I mean, you know, I when I hear you say that, I hear alarm, and I don't want to be one to cause alarm in people. I don't disagree that May is way too soon to be thinking about that. If we get everything perfect back by May 1st, which it's not going to be perfect by May 1st, but if we did, you still are going to be careful about it. So I agree. You know, I wouldn't go to, we had tickets also for Something in the Water. That great event from last year two, we were so looking forward to it. It was scheduled for late April. My God, no, you would not go then. You wouldn't go in late May. You probably, maybe by late June, you'd say, maybe. Late July, I think you'd be like, yeah, let's get out there and let's go listen to some music. But May is not. And so those people were smart. And yeah, our season tickets, honestly, this, you brought this up. The NBA's talking about, you know, trying to get its league going again by mid-June. But in a way that doesn't involve big crowds. You know, Major League Baseball has a plan in place. They may salvage the second half of their season, especially if they extend it into the fall. I don't know about the big crowds part of their strategy. That's up in the air. And so, you know, I think it's important, again, this is in the keep hope alive kind of realm, that we keep hope alive. I'm a sports fan. You know, Crystal, I am rudderless right now without sports. And so if you tell me right now that there's no sports in 2020, give me a few days to process that. I'll still be depressed as hell for the rest of the year if there's no sports. I mean, but if it means we live and we get to have an economy for the rest of the year, you know, and we get to come back next year, that'd be great too. But, you know, that's why the killjoys out there who are trying, like the Adam Schefters, who are trying to say the NFL should, you know, beat itself in the head with a stick. And show contrition and everything else. I mean, right now, I don't want to be one of those who's trying to say, take your medicine and like it. And there are people who are doing that. I don't want to be one of those kind of people.
Okay. So another listener, Deanna, is saying that you gave her a good laugh when you said, we can go back to ignoring the experts after this is all over. She said, that's funny, but real. So I will just leave this with, Chris Graham is always there and he's always going to give his opinion. No holding back, you know, on this kind of stuff. So I appreciate your insight. I know that you're reading.
Let me jump in here. It's not just an opinion. Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got, as they say too, you know, a butthole, I guess too. I don't want to be dismissive just having an opinion. I mean, I like to think that I'm a decently smart guy and I read a lot. So,
well, and that's what I was going to finish with, okay, is that you are reading about 10 times or 100 times more than most people are, because of course you are in the news business, but also you're just a curious person. And so your insight, and that's the reason that I asked about it earlier in the news update here, so to speak, was your opinion on the numbers and that kind of thing, because you are reading things, and it's great that you can share that with people that are listening in. So I appreciate your insight, Chris. Just want to remind people that if you're interested in anything that we talked about today, or you just want to catch up on the news, please go to AugustaFreePress.com. If you're interested in some of those links that we talked about, especially pertaining to Augusta Health and to the business community, definitely check out that AFP coronavirus links section. You can find that on the desktop site in the right-hand column, kind of the sidebar there, or you can find it if you're on your mobile phone or anything like that. You can find it right there on the front page of Augusta Free Press. So, Chris, we appreciate your knowledge again and appreciate you sharing the stories today. We'll join you as time permits going forward. We're going to try to do this on a daily basis just to kind of give you updates. So if you have questions or things that you'd like to see us address in a future news update, feel free to send those to us as well. You can email Chris at AugustaFreePress, the number 2@gmail.com. And again, that information's on our website as well. So thanks for tuning in today. Chris, anything you want to wrap up with?
I'm just glad the Zoom technology worked today and we were able to do this on Facebook Live from our different rooms. We're practicing physical distancing, at least demonstrating it. I'll be heading back downstairs though in about 2 minutes, and hopefully it's lunchtime. So yeah, I want to thank everybody for joining and thanks for the questions, thanks for the comments, and we're going to keep this going so that we can keep people informed and hopefully on a good path. So for Crystal Graham, I'm Chris Graham. We'll sign off. Have a great day, everybody.